Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is Monday, April 14th, 2003. And at this time, I'm going to open the public hearing on 5056. And at this time, we're going to be doing an overview of the priorities for the department. And we'll be opening as a subcommittee. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mike Marsh from ODOT. I understand the committee would like to go into prioritized list of services, and we'll hit the questions from prior meetings later, as well as the emergency board-like item. So if we go to this handout, which I believe the fiscal office has distributed to your tables there, it's titled Prioritized List of All Services, Agency, Oregon Department of Transportation. Purpose, as the members recall, of this process was to have state agencies go through and itemize their priorities so that comparisons could be made across agency lines, in particular looking at general fund, but also just to have an idea of what's going on with other fund priorities. And what I'll do is walk through this list of services, give a brief explanation, and be open to any questions you have about why we itemize them in the list as shown. To give some perspective about the methodology that we used, the Oregon Department of Transportation executive staff met and agreed on 8 criteria for doing this review. Those criteria keyed off of our mission statement and emphasized safety, economic development, jobs, and mobility, as well as customer service and accountability as the areas that we focused on as having the most value in the discussion. We also wanted to make sure we accounted for issues of public impact, revenue collection, the benefit or cost of a certain function in the long range in terms of does an investment now save money in the future, as well as legal requirements, understanding what the current statutes were for the state of Oregon, as well as federally looking at what is mandated from the federal government, in particular through Federal Highway Administration, but also through other federal agencies that have a regulatory or partnership function with the Oregon Department of Transportation. The way we approached these services was to take our true product cost initiative, which has gone through and costed out the cost to provide our services and products, and we used that as our way of determining what the costs were and then used those values or priorities, as I just indicated, as the way to attach a value to each one of the priorities. So, Mr. Chair, with that as the brief overview on the methodology, I'll go through the priorities as listed. The first one, Mr. Chair, is in the highway division, highway construction projects. In particular, given the requirements of producing and completing the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, we wanted to make sure that we are producing those projects, delivering those projects, and that was the number one priority, both for highway construction projects that are part of the State Transportation Improvement Program as well as OTIA. We felt the delivery expectations of the legislature and of the people were particularly high, and that was the number one priority. Number two was commercial motor carrier safety, relating to, again, our heavy emphasis on safety as a priority. The next couple areas, both motor carrier and driver safety, were viewed as high priorities and therefore ones we wanted to have as in the number two and number three positions. Number four was maintenance and emergency relief. Obviously, it's a tough process going through evaluating priorities amongst things such as maintenance and taking care of the pavement, as well as these other activities at the top level of the priorities for the organization. But after the need for safety and the delivery expected on OTIA and the STIP, we put maintenance as the next one because we need to maintain the highways. It's part of safety. It's part of the mobility for the traveling public. Rail crossing safety was next because of that safety emphasis again and making sure that we're taking care of both customers and traveling public as well as employees as we look at rail and crossing safety. Commercial vehicle registration, overdimension permitting, and tax collection received high weighting because of both its relationship to safety and mobility as well as the fact that it deals with revenue generation, and we receive revenue in from this function, so therefore wanted to make sure it was prioritized relatively highly. Truck size and weight, a similar issue, deals with both the safety element as well as there is a revenue generation function that comes from the motor carrier function. transportation safety regulations on the second page are again safety, and we're looking at both motorcycle, bicycle, driver education, all those components of the driver side of the equation, and those are prioritized high because of that safety relationship. Next is DMV, vehicle registration and permits. This is back to the revenue generation function, and again, important in order to maintain those revenues that do those highest priority functions that we discussed of safety and delivery of the STIP and OTIA, et cetera. Special needs transportation services are dealing with those folks who do not have choice in terms of transportation and mobility because of the lack of choice and the vulnerability of senior and disabled citizens. Wanted to make sure that that was prioritized high within the organization to recognize the fact that they don't have an alternative for their mobility. The 11th priority was technical assistance and coordination, access management, Metropolitan Planning Organization Support Technology Transfer Area. This is getting down within the priorities, but it's an important element of assisting local governments and making sure that they're doing what they need to be doing in terms of planning for the organization and for the transportation system as a whole within the state as a whole, as well as the next priority, which is local government. They're together because both relate to local government and they're part of the partnership of dealing with the transportation system. 13th priority is the transportation safety programs in general, beyond the safety regulations and training. This deals with driving under the influence of intoxicants, safety belts, youth, school safety, all these functions that have a pretty heavy reliance on safety and that we work through our partners within the transportation community.
Mike?
Sir?
Local government, the $212 million, is that part of their distribution formula, or is that another number of this?
Mr. Chair, this is a local government program outside of the city and county distribution.
Okay, good. I might ask you to explain that a little. Do you want to do that right now? What would be included in that?
Mr. Chair, this is where the city and county distribution would be those funds that are distributed just on the 40% share of the overall highway fund.
Right.
These projects are those projects that are local government projects where we have a role in sending the money to them for their work to be done. We may be part of managing the project. We may be part of assisting them with the project, but it really is a local government project.
Thanks.
The next priority is number 14, passenger rail operations projects and freight rail projects. This is prioritized towards the middle. Again, it's an element that's important to the organization, and yet it does not meet the standard of required safety function. It is important for alternatives to highway use, and so we've prioritized it in the middle here to make sure that there's a recognition that it's an important element of a partnership transportation system. And similarly, general public transportation services for the public transit division, where we assist local governments and transportation districts in getting their public transit and related bus and other transportation services running as efficiently as they can. Top of the next page, Mr. Chair, is DMV insurance and financial responsibility. This is one of those areas that, due to safety issues, the law requires us to ensure financial responsibility on the part of citizens, and we prioritize it toward the middle here, recognizing there is a safety element to what's happening, and not a critical large component of the department, but it is required by statute and does have a safety function. The statewide and special studies function of the transportation planning program relates to the ODOT strategic plan, the Oregon transportation plan, highway plan, transportation system, and refinement plans. This is the function of working both within our own system as well as with local governments to ensure that the partnership is working. And again, without planning and thinking ahead to have a reasonable transportation system, you won't have one, so we need to have this kind of investment at some level. Vehicle titling is back to a revenue generation function, which is important to the element of both having business-like tracking of titles as well as getting the revenue in for the operation of the department. Motor carrier audit is the function that, that generates revenue by checking with motor carriers and making sure that they are paying the taxes that they should be. And by having this function, it ensures that we get the revenues that are directed by statute. Fuels Tax Administration is a similar role, dealing with the fuels tax functions and audit and collections as it relates to used fuels beyond the motor carrier audit. The Governor Committee on Transportation Safety, the K-12 education, citizen involvement, these functions are elements of support functions for the transportation safety division, and they involve citizens and all sorts of different elements of providing insight and perspective as we work with transportation safety on a statewide basis. Transportation demand management is a function within public transit that works to with local governments, local districts, to allow them to figure out ways to incent participation in alternatives to single-occupant vehicles. And intercity passenger services, a similar function within public transportation and public transit, looking at how to get those districts to be able to have intercity service between cities as well as within cities. We move on to priority number 24. Mr. Chair, this is getting into the internal service functions. One of the first ones is information systems, business application software. This is viewed as higher than many of the other administrative functions because of the requirement to have this software developed in order to support those mainline functions that go direct to customer service for the external public, such as DMV. If DMV doesn't have the support and the working information technology, then they won't be able to support the public who come in for their customer service, as well as motor carrier, as well as looking at pass or cameras in the passes of the state. That type of work, is ITS stands for Intelligent Transportation Systems, which is getting that kind of information to the public when they need it. Record requests at DMV deals with those functions from businesses or from private individuals who request information. Not particularly highly prioritized, but it is customer service. Wanted to make sure that we provide adequate service there, as well as with DMV on business regulations, which relates to getting those businesses who deal with DMV the information and functions they need. Public transportation planning is a public transit division and has this amount of money that's used for ensuring that there is a transportation planning and a transportation planning function that relates transit districts to each other. And then the transportation program division function of research and analysis deals with all those elements of transportation managerial systems, ensuring the research, data systems, and project planning is completed on a statewide basis. Moving on to the special programs of highway, Mr. Chair. This is a myriad of programs. It includes salmon and watershed, bicycle and pedestrian, reimbursable or indirect costs, winter recreation, parking, snowmobile facilities. All these programs are meshed together in the special programs area and relate to a whole series of priorities, many of them which could be split out, but in terms of trying to meet the standard of Department of Administrative Services and LFO, we included them as one package in here. Some of them are absolutely required in terms of salmon and watershed functions. Others, such as snowmobile facilities, are part of a separate dedicated fund source that deals with a user that pays for a certain function like snowmobiles and want to see some facility improvements in that area. Board of Maritime Pilots is listed here as the
Senator Morris. Mike, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you talk a little bit about the other funds, where the $40 million comes from?
Mr. Chair, it's a
special programs.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, this $40 million comes from several different elements. The salmon and watershed program is one element, which is receives highway fund to deal with salmon requirements of fish passage. Bicycle and pedestrian receives, again, highway fund because of the connection in the law saying 1% will be spent on pedestrian and bicycle activities. So that is also a highway fund activity. Winter and recreation parking relates to a pass that people pay for winter parking, and we clean up the parking areas, ensuring that there's snow is taken off and that they're prepared for the parking for the customers who use them. Snowmobile pay through a special pass for use of snowmobile areas. And we do the facility improvements for those in terms of, again, cleaning off the parking facilities and making sure that the facilities are prepared for snowmobile use. The other function called reimbursable and the functions of indirect costs relate to those elements of the highway program that are not part of a particular project, but rather are things that relate to the system as a whole. For instance, bridge inspection. Bridge inspection is not assigned to one particular project. It's something that's done as a whole for the system. So it's accounted for as a special program or accounted for as an indirect cost, and that's tracked under this kind of function. So those are the types of things that are in here with the kinds of fund sources that are included, some dedicated, some relating to more broad elements of the department. And I could point out, Mr. Chair, that on page 136 to 140 of the overview document, there is a discussion about special programs in a little more detail. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. Moving on to the ID cards at DMV, priority number 31. ID cards are something that we provide as a service because some citizens do not have a need for a driver's license, and yet there are many times in society when there's a requirement to have a government-issued ID card, especially now with various issues around the war and terrorism. Therefore, the ID cards are provided, but we have to make sure that we receive and recover the cost of those cards because it's not part of the highway fund. So that's a priority we have listed just as a customer service. It does not really relate to transportation planning or transportation services. Disabled placards through DMV, the law stipulates that those are provided through the Department of Transportation and DMV, and so we provide those. It needs to happen. Not a critical function that has to go through ODOT, but it's found to be most efficient, so we placed it there. And the last couple of standard priorities are capital improvement, capital construction. One of the challenges of any transportation agency is that we're here to serve the public. It always becomes a challenge to provide for the capital investment and improvement of our own facilities, whether offices, maintenance sheds, or equipment bays. So the function is not prioritized particularly highly, and yet we want to make sure that it is something that we're taking care of what we own as well as what we provide to the public. And lastly, the administrative programs are shown as a separate listing, again, for similar reasons. We obviously exist to serve the public and not to serve our internal administrative structure, but within that administrative structure, we do have costs and elements that are shown in a listing here. The director's office, project communications, and public information to make sure, as stipulated by budget note and other requirements, that we get out information about our projects. On the next page, the information system infrastructure management relating to local streets or local area network operations, computer security, personal computer support, PCs for the department employees are what's included there, as well as purchasing and contract management, which indicates the way that we get our contracts completed and processed in order to get the projects done. And the financial services and human resources and internal audit services next in order, looking at the ways that we provide the internal service and get the job actually done, and completing with records management and forms design as the last element, something that has to occur to make sure we're operating efficiently, but viewed as a lower priority than the other functions. Mr. Chair, that's the listing of the elements of the department in priority order. I'm open to any questions.
Senator Dubuque.
Mike, help me understand why the Board of Maritime Pilots is listed as number 30. It covers the first two. I mean, safety, economy, jobs, that's what they're all about. They're one slot above ID cards. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the placement there was strictly on the basis that it's not a large impact compared to the full citizenry. One of our priority considerations was public impact. Are we affecting, in DMV's case, the entire state, in essence, through its services, or is it something that's much more focused?
And the view transportation on the Columbia River, and you find out how many people it affects.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, that's true. The other element of this, obviously, is that although it's part of the Department of Transportation, it's not something that is integral to our transportation activities for the department, and trying to prioritize it in a way that makes sense for the committee is a difficult one, considering that it's not actually part of our fund sources nor part of the operating element of the department. But I'm open to comment.
Welcome it. We just stuck it in there. You ignore it a lot.
The other thing I was surprised at, quite honestly, was on the next section, your administrative programs, was that Westside Light Rail's debt service comes above human resources. I was surprised at that prioritization.
Mr. Chair, let me
be working on human resources right now.
Mr. Chair and Senators, let me make sure that's clear. What we did is try to group categories, and financial services is our way of paying our bills. So therefore, we couldn't prioritize that too low. We need to pay the bills and get those things done. An element of paying the bills is Westside Light Rail debt service. So we're certainly not saying that the external function of dealing with lottery funds transfers for debt service on light rail is a higher priority than getting our employees paid. But in terms of paying bills, that's critical even before you bring people in for new hires. So that's what we were thinking about on that one.
Is there anything that isn't on the list?
Anything that is not on the list?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, no. Everything in the department in terms of costs has been placed on the list. We have not included within the listing here everything down to a $10,000 expenditure of detail, but it's shown here within a category. So if the members had a question about something that I may not have mentioned, I can indicate where it might have been grouped if there is a question such as that. Yes, Mr. Chair. And the chairs have in front of them a series of answers to questions should be beginning with March 31st on a blue sheet. And this relates to testimony on March 31st. The question was, how many track miles have been replaced and improved through the Willamette Valley Corridor? And as the members can see, this information came from the Union Pacific Railroad, and it shows that replacement rail from Portland to Salem was about $6.6 million, going down through track surfacing and alignment at $0.5 million for a total of capital investment of $29.6 million in the 97 through 2002 timeframe. There are no other questions on that one. I'll go to the April 7th discussion. A question there was, provide a budget review for engineering over the last couple biennia. Please include any projects worked on during this time frame in terms of total costs. And this sheet shows the preliminary engineering function with ODOT FTE and numbers of ODOT staff, consultants, and local government expenditures for a total preliminary engineering expenditure of $65,099,01 through 2003-2005, an expected expenditure of $135 million. Again, remembering that we're moving significantly to using outside consultants as compared to ODOT staff by the time we get to full operation of the ATIA program. Number of projects shown is 783 in 99-01, 900 in 03-05, and it'll continue on that high basis until, on an even higher basis until we finish the ATIA program. Again, remembering there are about 173 projects in ATIA. Construction engineering, Mr. Chair, shows the ODOT FTE slight increase from 99-01 down from 01-03. The expenditures are for ODOT staff, consultants, and local government have gone up pretty significantly, again, as we look to outsourcing for construction engineering from $45.2 million in 99-01 to $72 million in 03-05, number of projects going from 583 to 670 in that time period.
Senator Dukes?
Mike, at some point, I'm going to need to understand this better. I don't need to take up the whole committee's time with it, but somewhere, and you just mentioned it, we're using outside consultants. I thought we'd gotten into having more of the private sector doing more of this. And I'm starting to wonder if all we've done is add the private sector to what we were already doing so that we have, you know, one or two ODOT people and one or two private sector people where we used to just have one or two ODOT people. Because yeah, we put a lot more money into it, and so we're getting a lot more projects out the door. But if we were doing a lot of the what we refer to as design build with private consultants, I wouldn't have expected to see us with increases like this. So I mean, if we're getting a lot more consultants for construction engineering and we have almost 100 more projects, but we've still got more ODOT engineers as well. So I just need to walk through all that and try to understand how we do that. Because I think we had an expectation, and the result is different than our expectation was, but maybe the result couldn't have been any different. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, if I give a quick shot on that, and if the Senator would like to have more time, I'm happy to do that. It's an excellent question. We are making a transition now. And the question about why are we increasing and have we just added to where we are or are we actually replacing is a well-placed question. We are adding to where we are now. We're not actually reducing the number of people who are involved in doing construction engineering or engineering functions. As we get OTIA in, we would have added many positions to deal with OTIA. We didn't add any positions. So where we are is a placement of a foundation of doing the work now with in-house to a certain extent, but adding, as we get all these new projects, we're shifting internally to deal with the same number of positions and adding those use of outside resources. So the Senator's comment is correct. We haven't actually reduced the number of people working internally. We've, in essence, added on a significant element of program. If you can imagine, $500 million is a significant percentage of the department in terms of contract work. And all that addition, in essence, is being done by shifting internally to do the additional work. We have a slight increase in FTE in this transitionary period because we're doing work differently. We're not doing the same kind of work that we've done in the past. We're expecting to have a shift for employees and trying to figure out how best to use those outside resources. So we have alternative delivery unit, which was established to make sure we're using those outside resources as best we can. It's a different way of doing business for ODOT. That requires a different kind of process of establishing the contracts as well as managing those contracts.
When's the last time there was an audit done on the engineering section?
Mr. Chair, an audit done on the engineering section. I can get that answer right off the top. In terms of an audit just on engineering, the answer I'd give would be
bigger than that. That included engineering, or
we had five audits in the 1998-99 time frame. And many of those hit the engineering function. I'd be happy to get information on that if you or staff would like that.
Mr. Chair, my concern is this is one of the most important sections of ODOT. We don't engineer it right, people get killed out there. But on the other hand, over the years, people have said, how does this happen on a project? You know, this nice little project that suddenly ends up this nice big project and costs way too much money, and then it goes away, and we don't see it because it costs too much money. So at one point in time, I decided to go backwards, to take from the sort of the little project and see how it ended up the nice big project. And where I always got stuck was in engineering. Somewhere in engineering, it went from 25 lights to 150 lights. Somewhere in engineering, it went from, you know, from two lanes to five lanes, or it went from this or that, and it didn't look like what the local people ever thought it was going to look like. And so I'm still trying to figure out, with more engineers there, if we haven't increased because of OTIA, which is what I would have expected the increase to be, then I'm surprised that we've increased, because that was a huge workload, and even though we wanted to hire most of that out, you can still understand. Somebody's got to watch the folks you hire, you know, you contract out with. So so much money ends up getting spent on our highway projects as a result of the engineering that I'm still trying to get a handle on engineering and see, do they need to come out with 150 lights instead of 25? Do they need to come out with five lanes instead of two? You know, or are we designing to the textbook? And I don't know the answer, but nobody seems to be over this section. I don't know of a single person other than the head engineer. But I don't know of anybody else in the department who can go in and tell them to do things differently. And that always concerns me. And I've met the head engineer, and she's wonderful. She's far more flexible than the folks we've had in the past. But still, I'm trying to figure out how this integrates with all of the rest of it. I know what happens if when Representative Krieger is upset because there's asphalt in four, he doesn't think there should be asphalt, and we know how to do that. It's a hard time figuring out how to make these projects smaller or how to make them doable.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I'd be happy to get information about our number of change orders and the scope of projects that were included in the last audits, as well as get whatever information I can get in terms of performance measures that relate to the amount of change orders and scope of change to you before work session and see if that... Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, change orders are where a project is established and something changes during the course of the project to say it needs an extra light or it needs another function. And that's what results in those scope changes to change the breadth of a project. So by getting that information to you, maybe some comparison to other states, it can maybe help get some perspective. Thank you. Mr. Chair, if there's no other questions on that one from the 7th, we'll move to the 8th. This was the day we had the discussion of access management, and what this sheet answers is a summary of the 2003-2005 access management program with a cost by element of the department. On the front side of the page, it discusses the split for functional areas of transportation program development, maintenance, preservation, and bridge. And on the back side, highway safety, operations, modernization, and special programs, showing the shift over time in both positions and function in order to help manage access functions as well as respond more to the interest on the part of the customers of getting a timely and shared expectation on how long things will take. There are no questions on that one. April 9th is the next one, a white sheet. Sorry to take the members' time on so many questions here. We just want to make sure we're caught up to date. April 9th's question first was, what are the safety comparisons of multi-lane divided and non-divided highways? And this goes into quite a discussion through the rest of the page, but the bottom line is divided highways limit left turn opportunities. The non-divided highways allow for the center turn lane is a second choice. The third option is four-lane highways, which do not provide a refuge. And then two-lane highways that end up providing most of the turning conflicts that are created for motorists. As the summary indicates, about two-thirds of urban crashes are on undivided highways and one-third on divided. And as the number of highways increase, statistics have shown that the number of crashes also increase. So that's the reasons for trying to manage this kind of information, this kind of provision of service in a way that reduces those numbers. The next question, Mr. Chair, was how much ODOT has spent on the Newburgh-Dundee bypass to date. And to date, that cost has been $2.29 million. On the bypass project, but obviously more to come. And then, can ODOT require the use of joint access for a driveway? As it says, the simple answer is no. The law does not give ODOT the authority to require a property owner to share a driveway. However, ODOT can creatively work with local governments to acquire access management along adjoining properties and leave a single reservation of access, but this is expensive to conduct that kind of acquisition. The primary goal is for ODOT to work with local jurisdictions to encourage property owners to share driveways and to get information about access out so that there's an understanding with local governments as well as citizens about the issues of access and safety.
By backing up to the Newburgh-Dundee, what's the time period on that? Because I think that's just the most recent expenditures, isn't it? That doesn't, I mean, this thing has been worked on for, well, actually since 1947, but intensively over the last 6 or 7 years.
Mr. Chair, this is for the current active project. I certainly won't go back to 10 years ago or certainly to 1947. If the chair would like us to do some research on that, we could, but it's going to be historical.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The next series of questions, Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore. Could we come back to an issue that we raised last week and you responded to here with respect to some type of legislative action to support a better management of these access disputes? Has the department given any thought? I see you've got a paragraph here addressing that. Have you given any thought to working with us to initiate something that would provide for a better dispute resolution?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, I can follow up on that. The question is whether we have given thought to a way of dispute resolution regarding access management. And
when you have joint access issues, and I raised the issue in Albany, where it was a long protracted dispute. I see Mr. Warner's here, so I can look over your shoulder there. It would be a question as to whether that is something that the Department of Appeals is worth pursuing.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Warner, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. If your question is, are we proposing something to look at in legislation to look at that particular issue, I don't think we've actually proposed anything yet to date, but I think based on a conversation we had last week with you, John Rosenberg, my executive deputy director on the highway side, and I have started discussions with our access management folks to figure out how we actually could either do something through our administrative rule process, as you suggest, or, again, firm up some of our existing processes with local government to address some of those things. And we've not yet come to the conclusion whether we need to actually have a state law change, if that's your question, to address that issue.
I personally believe that there's some opportunity to make the system work better.
I agree. Good conversation.
I'd love to work with you on initiating something. It may not be this session. It requires statutory change. But
that's the important thing. I mean, first of all, we've compounded the problem by eliminating, for example, let's take the Newburgh project. We went in there and eliminated a lot of entrances into property, very valuable, storefront type stuff, properties. Basically forcing people to joint access, but not providing any mechanism in order to remediate the differences that might exist. And so I would sure hope that there would be something coming along that would try to deal with that, because it is not fair, as that one fellow that I talked with you about, for him to have a piece of property in which that someone would like to buy it, but there's absolutely no value without an access to it. And it is in one of the most premium corners, and the same way up there at Sherwood. You guys have clarified some of the issues on that one, but there sure needs to be something, particularly worse than joint access, to provide a mechanism to. There's going to be a joint access there, and here's how it'll work.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Morris, I agree with you, and I took away some good good insight from your perspective to help us maybe be a little more aggressive in terms of how we can address some of those issues of joint access, because they do become very thorny, as you point out, when you don't have property owners that are willing to cooperate with one another, and maybe, frankly, at times in competition with one another.
If I have the access and you want it, I can buy your property at a depressed price pretty soon if I wait long enough.
Yes.
Representative Hanson.
One, in the public safety ways and means, we've done a lot of discussions on dispute resolution and mediation service. And those, there's certainly an opportunity there. ODOT, I know, is already involved with them, but kind of part of the silo mentality of the way we do business and the shortness of the legislature, we don't get an opportunity to do joint hearings and stuff in terms of how the relationship with that service that the state's heavily involved in, and most of our departments are involved in, but whether there's a way to streamline the process using that resource, I would imagine there is, but we don't get into that. There's no good vehicle for that discussion to occur, at least in ways and means, but definitely I think we'll be continuing funding for mediation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if there's no other questions on the 9th, move on to April 10th. Should be a white sheet with that heading on, April 10th, 2003 questions. The first one there, Mr. Chair, is provide a listing of those impacted and revenue anticipated from the outdoor advertising sign fee. and it lists the number of signed permit owners, the 295, as well as the relocation folks who are in the midst of a move of a sign, as well as the licensed companies. And I want to make sure it's clear that licensed companies are those who, as a business, provide signs, not companies who happen to have a sign at their own premises, but rather those who are in the business of providing signs. And the costs and revenues expected down below, showing the signed permit applications through the annual business license for those businesses that conduct this kind of business, are listed. And the indication is that the department now achieves 100% cost recovery from the fees, and prior to this time received much less than 100% that's required in order to cover this and not have it be in highway fund impact, as the AG indicated was a problem. Mr. Chair, the second question is related to the utility fee increase. Should ODOT request a move, does ODOT still charge a fee? The answer is that yes, if a utility is an ODOT right-of-way, on ODOT right-of-way by permit, ODOT must recover all costs, including the finding, designing, et cetera, for the function the utility pays for the relocation, which was the practice prior to charging for the permit fees. The practice of what we're trying to do with this fee is just to make sure it's covered up front. Third question, Mr. Chair, is if a sign is not in the ODOT right-of-way, can ODOT charge a fee for that sign? And the answer is yes. The state outdoor advertising laws are found generally in ORS 377 and specifically pertain to permits and fees and require that the state highway agency ensure that the number of outdoor advertising signs does not increase and that the cost of issuing permits are covered within the cost of the issuance rather than becoming a highway fund impact.
Senator Dukes.
So you charge permit fees for things that are on private property?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, yes. These are not on the ODOT right-of-way. They are viewable from the highway and, as defined by law, need to be regulated by state law.
Now, that doesn't include just the great big billboards, does it? I remember on 101 once having a discussion about some guy's house for sale sign that ODOT pulled out and said you can't have there even though it was on private property.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, there are federal regulations about size and proximity to a highway. Most of what we're talking about, or all of what we're talking about within this element of the fee structure are where you're providing a sign at a facility other than your business. In other words, it's a sign that is out there not associated with a building, but rather just advertising for some location elsewhere and making sure that that outdoor advertising for a business that's located elsewhere is a reasonable size.
And in this situation, as I recall, the man's property was off the highway, but he got a neighbor to agree to let him put the sign, the for sale sign, on their property, which was adjacent to the highway. So it met your criteria, and you made him take it down. I'm just wondering, do we accommodate for the fact that our highways go through cities and become downtown city streets?
Mr. Chair and Senator Deuce, yes. The issue, I don't know the specific situation. Do we know if the sign was particularly big or?
Just a regular old sign. Not big.
Well, if I can talk with the senator offline here and get information about that specific occurrence. The fact is that we're trying to make sure that the signs are not something that causes a safety issue for the traveling public, and that's what the regulations are trying to key off, as well as the 1965 federal regulation about beautification issues.
By America. I don't think Lady Bird ever anticipated it was going to do the guy's for sale sign.
I'd be happy to do some follow-ups.
Thank you.
Mike, before we leave signs, this committee had some concern when we were hearing this, the state fair budget. And of course, that's a tough one because we've put a lot of money into that, and it has some general fund in it. One of the issues was properly marked entrances out on the highway, you know, to get to the state fair. And I know, I think we talked about that once before. Are we going to be able to do anything to make sure that it's very clear out on the highway that, you know, here's the routes to get to the state fair, and the state fair will be going on at a certain time?
Mr. Chair, my recollection was we do have a blue sign out there, a tourism-related sign that says Oregon State Fair, but
right.
In terms of times, I'm not aware of an issue around showing the times. I can do some tracking on that subject.
You know, my thought was, I mean, as part of the state operations and something that, you know, everyone celebrates, and if we could do something like that, even some of the portable signs, you know, I'm thinking of some of the reader board type things to get out there.
Let me know if
there's any mechanism to provide that.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll check that out.
Something that would be brought in, temporary sign during the period just before the fair.
There are pretty narrow restrictions about what's actually in the right-of-way. Okay. But I can find out what's been discussed and what may be coming regarding the fair. Mr. Chair, the last question on this series is providing plans for the $2.5 million Sylvan Maintenance Station project. And what you have is a brief listing, and I can actually provide the plans if the members or Senator Morris would like to see the specific plans. The project was a replacement of the Sylvan Maintenance Yard at the Shoals Ferry Road near Highway 26 area. It was conducted in three phases, or will have been conducted in three phases. The primary maintenance buildings were completed in phase one, which is now complete. The phase one process was four buildings, and then the district office staff were moved into private lease facilities because there was not room in the facility after it was reconstructed after the highway project. Phases two and three involved, first in two, the vehicle maintenance facility and a four-bay storage building, and phase three, two four-bay storage buildings, as well as the district building for the employees, and then final site fill, drainage, and landscaping for the facility. Landscaping and facility costs are more significant than other sites due to the requirements of the city and the neighborhood in terms of making sure that the vehicles are not standing out in the facility, that they're only that they're all covered in some kind of way. Number two, that the landscaping is done in such a way as to be a transitionary into the neighborhood itself, as well as only one-story buildings with no two-story buildings being allowed on the facility as had previously existed. And then also moving the office building back on the facility, or building the office building on the facility, so we could get out of the lease costs that the employees have been in on a temporary basis since the project was completed. And the individual costs for those functions are shown, Mr. Chair, on Attachment A, showing the cost for Phase 2 site work as well as Phase 3 and the storage buildings that were involved. And if the members would like to have more information, I can certainly provide that.
Senator Dukes and Senator Morris.
Are these metal buildings, wooden buildings? What kind of?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, these will be standard wooden buildings.
Senator Morris?
Did I hear it correctly, Mike? You said that all equipment and vehicles have to be undercover?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, the heavy equipment, that's true.
Because it's a visual blight, is that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, correct.
Can I just...
Yes,
first
sure. Yes, express
Okay. There might be a better way of doing it, but
we're thinking about moving outside of their city or making sure that it comes out of their budget. Yeah, those kind of things cross my mind.
Well, wouldn't it seem like it was worth their while, Mr. Chair, to have some of this stuff handy and available?
I would have thought so.
I understand the concern, Mr. Chair. And if there aren't any other questions on that packet, that's the end of the questions, Mr. Chair. Open to overall questions or moving on to the emergency board item if you're ready.
Further questions? Okay, we're finished. Oh, yes.
What would happen if we didn't do the Sylvan buildings?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, there are several scenarios that could be responded to in that regard. One would be if we don't do the buildings at all, it would mean that we have not complied with the covenant requirement from the city. Therefore, they would not allow us to use the facility, in which case we would move to a facility further out from the urban growth boundary, being further from the maintenance requirements of the Sylvan Hill in that area, would make our response time longer for dealing with issues and problems in that area.
Thank you.
Questions? Okay. Due to the fact that we have a quorum present, we're going to go ahead and open as a full committee and go into a work session to talk about the question. First close the public hearing. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5056, and we'll open it as a work session with a quorum on the Oregon Department of Transportation request for approval to apply for a federal grant.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, state agencies are required by law to obtain prior legislative approval of proposed federal grant applications. The purpose of this requirement is to retain legislative control of federal initiatives that could potentially create future state funding obligations. The Department of Transportation has a request before you. There is a letter from the Department of Transportation with the co-chair's initials saying it's okay to do a work session. And I'm going to have Mike Marsh explain the grant request to you, and then Lori Fierley from the Department of Administrative Services will provide the recommendation from the exec department, and then I will from LFL.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, Mike Mars from ODOT, here to present on an emergency board-like item, which is a request for federal grant application authority. Your LFO staff define the process and the requirement for us to appear before you, and so this is an action item aside from our current budget requests. As it noted in our letter, Mr. Chair, the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st Century included an element for supporting covered bridge reconstruction, rehabilitation, and preservation. There are 51 covered bridges in Oregon. None of those are on the state transportation system, but they're on local city and county transportation systems, and the state, as the receiver of federal funds, has the opportunity to apply for grants. When we heard about this potential grant opportunity from the federal government, we sent the word out to local governments. The word came back initially that there wasn't significant interest in applying, but then we did find out that Lane County has two bridges for which they'd like to receive funding. The federal government was interested enough in receiving the request that they actually pushed the deadline back a few weeks to allow us to appear before you and seek the authority to receive these funds. They are two different covered bridge projects. One is for the Lowell covered bridge east of Eugene. The other one is the Coyote Creek covered bridge. And both these would total approximately $1.6 million in total cost for the project. Because of the 80%, 20% funding split, the amount we'd actually seek in the grant process is $1,323,760. And this would allow us to apply for those funds. If we do compete well and receive the funds, we'll be back to request expenditure limitation authority to transfer these monies to the county for their use, and we would have responsibility for oversight of the function, but they would actually complete the projects. Mr. Chair, members, open to questions.
Mike, have these dollars for covered bridges been available before? Have we accessed them before?
Mr. Chair, yes, there have been different times in the past when there have been funds related to this that have come to the state.
Yes, Chairman. Yes, sir. I was worked very closely with this project some years ago. I hate to date myself, but at the same time, our covered bridges was in such bad state of repairs that to be able to receive the federal funds as well as some restored knowledge has been the one blessing for the state, because many of our covered bridges are in bad disrepair. I certainly support this request.
Well, Senator Yee and I, you know, we worked on this a few years ago and with a tremendous effort trying to save these things. And then we had one that actually at Depot Bay had to be done by private citizens.
That's right.
And thank goodness they went ahead and reacted, because that bridge would have been lost. Mm-hmm. And what was amazing, it appeared in all of the advertisement for tourism. And so we were going to allow something that was kind of a cornerstone, come and see what we have of falling to the river.
Okay.
Any further questions? Or?
And good morning, Chair George, members of the subcommittee. For the record, I'm Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that you approve this grant application request for ODOT.
No, you were going to do a presentation.
Only that legislative fiscal office also recommends you approve the request. So we'll need a motion.
All right. We're at a work session. Yes, we are.
Then, Mr. Chair, I'll move that we approve the request from ODOT to apply for a federal grant for these covered bridges.
Senator Dukes has recommended that a motion that would we would apply for a federal grant for $1,323,760. Is there any further discussion? If not, I can do this without objection, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Without objection?
So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Before this committee? All right, we'll close the work session, and with the cap of the gavel, we'll be adjourned on the approval of the federal request. Thank you.